say.
You got some pipes.
Only fools rush in.
That's a terrible Elvis impression.
There's a ghost behind you, but I
also, you look like you're on medication.
And we're back. Welcome to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I apologize for putting you through that, but that is a big running theme through one of the movies we're reviewing today, and we are finishing up our review of the Warren Cinematic Universe by covering and reviewing both Conjuring 2 and Annabelle Creation, which is the second Annabelle movie. Those are the two movies we'll go through in the second part, part two of our Warren Cinematic Universe review, all in lead up to The Nun, which does debut this Friday, early in September at the end of the week. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Yeah, I don't know why you tried to look at me the way you just looked at me while you were singing that song. Because you were shaking your head, looking out the tops of your eyes. It was like somebody singing into a flashlight at a campfire.
Well, I was trying, it was to, trying to be with scary? My audience in a heartfelt way. Yes, that, I don't know either.
In a recording studio, that's how you would sing? Like you're telling a scary... and just look, giving me the top of your head. That was terrifying.
Yes. We try to be creative here at MMO. That's what we try to do. But we are doing the Conjuring 2 and Annabelle Creation, finishing up the Warren Cinematic Universe. Mike, you are through, dude, one half of this.
Yeah, but I don't know what's scarier. Patrick Wilson singing that song? In the middle of a scary movie, supposed tension relief, because it was bizarre, or you singing at the top of the
episode. The only connection I could make through that song being sung in Conjuring 2 is that this Warren's universe and Crazy Rich Asians live in the same cinematic universe. Right. So Michelle Yeoh's character is not a dejected mother-in-law so much as just an unhappy demon. That's my conclusion that I was able to drive from this.
That's a good, that's true. Correct. But also, I don't understand like the purpose of that song being in this movie other than to give folks time to go to the bathroom and clean themselves
we'll
up.
We'll talk
clean
about
up
it.
Their
this
mess.
Was this was more the
it's like a Super Bowl commercial that's the boring one.
This is more the not so much the creepy movie as it is the test of the relationship between Lorraine and Ed, and they kind of had scenes like gratuitous scenes like that to kind of show that there was love between them, and look at these adoring looks they give each other. We'll get into all of it, but we are going to start, like we said, go back and listen to part one. Our first episode covering the first Conjuring movie and the first Annabelle movie was released last week. Want to go back and check those out. We are doing these two movies today in the lead up to our big review, movie event review of The Nun, which will be out at the end of this week sometime, maybe Friday night, maybe Saturday, we don't know.
Maybe Monday if a best popular film news.
Yeah, we have a couple options, so we'll see what happens. We'll start at the top talking about The Nun has kind of not been reviewed yet.
Yeah, Warner Brothers is starting to worry me. Yes, they hold on to their reviews, but it's starting to worry me that they, usually a well-reviewed movie, they're going to let you know.
Throw it out there, yeah.
Ahead of time. Still, I mean, we've enjoyed following the cinematic universe as fans.
This has been like the most unlikely of through lines that I can remember. I mean, you have obviously the MCU is the big budget ones, but these are movies being made for $20 million, $6 million.
Sure.
And they're highly entertaining.
In terms of the trends of filmmaking and studio filmmaking, this is like one of the biggest success stories. So it's super relevant kind of to our focus. And it's also down the road from us. So like in terms of relevancy or reason to talk about it, we have an abundance of those, and yet when we program this into our schedule, the reviews weren't there. We probably should have
there's nothing
I'm a little afraid yet. Like I'm afraid if it's poorly reviewed, when you listen to this episode, the reviews probably would have dropped by now,
trickling out, you'd at least hope, but
by Wednesday, Thursday,
even if it is, I mean, it's not going to be lower reviewed than Annabelle 1. Annabelle 1 had terrible critical reviews.
So here's the thing.
Made a shitload of money.
Even if it comes out with bad reviews, we enjoyed the hell out of that Annabelle 1.
Exactly. It's
rewatch.
Exactly my point. So there's going to be value in it regardless of probably
just
what's
on
screen.
Just the nun just going... That's going to be fun.
What
was
you going
to
say? I sneezed. thank you. All right. That's what it was. But yeah. Just a mix of a rabid dog and an Elvis impersonator.
Here's the thing. My favorite part of the preparation for this entire episode was listening to the last podcast on the left's two-part series on the Enfield Poltergeist.
Sure.
You know, Henry Zebrowski starts it off. playing Wipeout on his belly, which is hysterical. And then his British accent throughout. I won't be that guy who just tries to, you know, retell the jokes of somebody else. But
we are big fans of Last Podcast on the Left.
It's funny as hell. It's some of their best work.
So let's talk about The Conjuring 2, Electric Boogaloo. That's the next one up here. Mike's going to give us, what are you going to give us? Cast and crew, production stories? How are you going to start?
Cast and crew here, directed by James Wan. We profiled him in the first episode. He is the godfather now of this cinematic universe
in many
ways.
He's like the keeper of the Warren's legacy in my brain, I wrote down,
I wanted to call him the Wan father, but I realized that is such a bad joke.
That's a terrible joke.
That I would just mention it as an aside.
Right. Right, so you actually have never said it.
Dad joke. Really? So yeah, it's like I didn't say
exactly.
It's like I'm the cool kid making fun of my dorkier half.
That's what I think of when I look at you, yeah.
Wan's family, he was born in Malaysia. They moved to Perth, Australia before he relocated to Melbourne. This is where he would go to college at RMIT University. Wan's first film, Mike, Stygian. I can't say that with an Australian accent, but that won the Melbourne Underground Film Festival Award for Best Guerrilla Film. So he kind of is like Spike Lee, kind of with his first film, really burst onto the scene. A few years later, Wan and his friend, now the uber successful Lee Whannell, who just made Upgrade, and he's also did Insidious 3.
Wow.
He's been an actor in 33 credits, a writer of 18 credits, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
so Lee and James, they kind of started writing a short film right after that first success called Saw. They made the short film. They got a couple million to make the feature film. And that was a humongous box office success, $1.2 million budget, $100 million plus at the box office worldwide.
Jigsaw is now a name up there with Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees.
Franchise, horror franchise, box office, that's got to be up there in the overall.
But when you have seven sequels, yeah, it's going to break in some money for you.
Then again, with the specs that we're going to talk about with Conjuring and Annabelle in this cinematic universe, that in terms
not
of budget,
for cash either.
Budget versus cash made, Warner Brothers has got to be so happy. So, make the right friend and all your dreams will come true. That's Mike and I's philosophy. That was our strategy in our own
alliance. I
would like
to apologize to you.
I apologize to you as well. The Conjuring 2 is written once again by the Hayes brothers. FYI, they've been attached to write Journey to the Center of the Earth 4 and Die Hard : Year 1 in the future.
No.
So I like these guys. I like their work.
Are we getting a Die Hard prequel of John McClane? Is that what that's going?
The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2, even if that's played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, how bad is that movie going to be? And how bad is Journey to the Center of the Earth 4 going to be after The Rock just made Jumanji? And unless they recast Brendan Fraser, which was a bad movie in general, and he's old. I would love an old, fat Brendan Fraser starring in a kid's movie nowadays as like Dora the Explorer.
The Rock.
With The Rock.
Yeah,
I would love that. But they won't do it.
No.
And The Rock should not be in more things, especially more things like this.
Disagree.
Journey to the Center of the Earth 4. You want to go see that with The Rock in it.
The Rock should be in
this. After he just did Jumanji.
He should be in this podcast. He should be in so many things. I just want everything, Rock.
All right. Well, so Ed and Lorraine Warren are played by Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson.
They have a lot of on-screen chemistry.
Yes, they do. Now, listening to those last podcasts of the Left episodes, they mentioned that the real Warrens look like the grandfather from Up, both of them. I don't think that's true. I think Lorraine Warren was a pretty young gal back in the day based on
the pictures. They show pictures of the Conjuring.
You know, Ed, Ed looks like the grandfather from Up.
Okay.
But I wonder, Mike, would this franchise work better if, like, the Warrens were played by Brian Cox and Brian Cox. Would that be better movies?
Brian Dennehy and Brian Dennehy.
No, I mean, these are beautiful.
Got some ghosts in the wall.
Patrick Wilson is a beautiful man.
Yes.
I'm not afraid of saying it. And Vera Farmiga is a beautiful woman.
Yes.
Always has been.
Yes.
Always been also Mike's favorite.
I think they're fine playing the Warrens.
Anyway, Vera Farmiga, She'll have Godzilla, King of the Monsters, coming out in 2019. She's got a lot of voiceover. She's going to be in the miniseries Central Park 5, and she's already in this year's Boundaries, The Commuter with Liam Neeson, and she's coming out in The Front Runner with Hugh Jackman, which is going to be a big Oscar movie. So
yeah,
that's
a lot of pub for that one.
That's Vera's year. She's still, you know, her career's going strong there. Patrick Wilson, he has been in The Commuter as well. They reteamed for that.
Oh.
Insidious, The Last Key, he just came out with. Nightmare Cinema is an indie movie he's got going on this year. And he is a villain in Aquaman this Christmas time.
That could be interesting.
Madison Wolf plays the haunted Frances Hodges, the little girl that the actress has been in all kinds of adult movies. Not adult movies is the wrong word. Rated R movies.
Thank you for clarifying, yes.
That would have been the wrong slipperoo of the good God. Madison Wolf is a young actress. She's been in True Detective, Scream the TV series, Trumbo, Keanu, I Kill Giants, and Trafficked, which sounds like a little kid in a prostitution ring.
Sure
kind
does.
Of scary.
Yeah.
You know, so these parents must
she's
be
not that
like
old. Being in traffic was like 01.
This girl's like 14, 15, and she's been in all these. True Detective. She's been in True Detective, which was like a horrific screenplay in terms of.
She was in the
so
movie
she's
Traffic?
Never. No, Trafficked coming out this year.
Oh, okay,
she's,
okay.
She's
okay,
like a 15
okay.
year old in a sex crime.
Right.
My guess is a
right.
sex crime
gotcha.
Movie. And basically, her entire career has been in dark subject matter,
yeah.
rated R level movies and TV series.
I'm sure this will have no repercussions
so these
on her
parents,
adolescent years.
Right, I'm wondering that she's either got to be like the most, you know,
professional girl ever.
Or these parents are bad parents? Are we going to be judgmental?
It's
no,
not for us. It's not for us to decide.
There's hippy dippy, liberal.
They are people that put their child in a position to make money.
Yeah. So Frances O'Connor is the haunted mother. Peggy Hodgson, this retainer is acting up again on me. I can't say SHs in any podcast. I'm always just like a 12-year-old in math class. Sorry. Anyway, Peggy Hodgson, she's been nominated for 2 Golden Globes for 2001's Madame Bovary and 2015's The Missing, which was a good series, Mike. It was so good that I overlooked the worst wigs in the history of moving pictures.
This guy.
These wigs were drawn on with crayon. They were, it was
this
paint.
This is for The Missing?
From The Missing.
I mean,
it's like,
not
I don't
I'm
like,
familiar with.
Like, it's so obvious. These are actor and actress for in their 50s, and they look great for being in their 50s.
Mm-hmm.
I look like I'm in my 50s. I'm in my 30s.
Okay,
but if I put on a jet black wig, I would look like an asshole.
Well, maybe. It's possible, I guess. There's only one way to find out.
And so do they in the beginning,
all
in
right.
the flashbacks of The Missing. But I love The Missing anyway. Lauren Esposito is the older haunted sister, Margaret. Patrick McCauley and Benjamin Haig are the younger haunted brothers, Johnny and Billy. Bob Adrian, Mike, is Bill Wilkins.
Oh, God.
Javier Botet is the Crooked Man. The Nun is Bonnie Ahrens.
Somebody played the Crooked Man?
Yeah.
That's
that practical
wasn't
effects.
CGI?
No, that's practical effects there, buddy. Of course, Maurice Gross is played by famed British actor from MI5, Rogue Nation, and friend of the pod, Snobby McPissyface himself. No, it's Simon McBurney again. That's an inside meta joke from
yeah, you gotta go back to,
former MI5.
Way back, yeah.
So that's my
that's Conjuring 2 cast and crew.
I went off on some tangents.
No,
there.
You did well. I was happy for you. Conjuring 2.
I exercised some demons in that.
Conjuring 2. Some specs written by the Hayes brothers, like Mike told you, Chad and Carrie, also there back from Conjuring 1. James Wan and David Leslie Johnson all get screenplay credits as well. Hayes brothers and Wan also get story by credits and characters created by credits to Hayes brothers 2. James Wan back to direct. Debuted June 7th, 2014 at the TCL Chinese Theater in L.A., so now more Cinerama, sadly. It's a dark day on my existence.
Mm.
Went wide on June 10th, a couple days later, a 134-minute runtime on an R rating, produced by New Line, the Saffron Company, and Atomic Monster Productions, which, of course, is James Wan's production company. Distributed by Warner Brothers, a $40 million budget given to this movie, which is double that of Conjuring 1's budget. But the scariest thing about this movie, once again, would be the box office numbers. $320.4 million worldwide box office.
Awesome.
Just beating out The Conjuring 1's number.
So after Annabelle 1, Mike, we all thought, you know, like after Mission Impossible 2, that MI3's box office, that the next movie in the franchise's box office would go down.
Yeah.
Not the case here.
No, this thing is in the black and in the black well. $102 million domestic box office finished Conjuring 2 as the 10th biggest R-rated horror film ever and gave Conjuring movies two of those top 10 spots.
Go see a doctor for that.
Conjuring 1 comes in at the number 5 in that list as well. The Warren Cinematic Universe has 3 of the top 20 slots ever for biggest R-rated horror film grosses. Wow. Annabelle's coming in at number 20. Annabelle 1, that is. The critical reception was a bit of a step down, but still very respect, at least compared to Conjuring 1, but still very respectful across the board for a horror movie, especially considering the reception of Annabelle. 7.4 IMDb rating on 172,000 reviews. Certified Fresh Rotten Tomatoes 79% on 231 reviews.
Still very critic strong. Reviews,
very strong, yeah. 183 of those being positive. The average critic score of 6.7 out of 10. 81% audience score on 53,000 reviews. Average audience rating of 3.9 out of 5. 66 Metascore based on 38
critics.
That's
a little
scores.
Lower, yeah.
A little bit. Two perfect 100s, one of those from the Schmodown competitor, critics, Drew McWeeny, on behalf of Hitflix, gave it a perfect 100.
Sorry, my maturity level is just very low.
It's going to be a rough McWeeny. Episode. 17 total reviews of a 75 or higher, but 9 total scores of 50 or lower, including the bottom 3 scores all being under 40. I don't know how you settle that a film is a 39 as opposed to a 40, though, but somebody did it.
Here's the thing. Like, I think this movie is better than Conjuring 1.
I do, too.
I think it delivers so many more goods, and yet the critics, what? When it delivers popular goods?
Snobbery.
Is that, what are we saying?
The snobbery.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
It makes no sense.
But I'm with you. I do think this was the better movie, and I think we're in the minority. We had a poll up on MM and Oscar on Facebook, or I'm sorry, on Twitter, MM and Oscar, and we... The favorite movie of the Warren universe, I think Conjuring 2 finished in fourth place out of the four.
That makes no sense to me. All of you make no sense to me.
So that's where we are.
That's why I want more audience interaction, because I want you to explain yourselves. And
yeah,
I want to get to know you more.
I would love to hear that.
You know, yes, this film won the ASCAP Film and Television Music Award for top box office film, Joseph Bishara, this composer. It won Best TV Spot at the Golden Trailer Awards. It won the iHorror Award for Best Horror Film, but it was only nominated and lost somehow for Best Horror Film at the Saturn and Empire Awards. It lost for Favorite Thriller at the People's Choice Awards. It was fourth on our poll. You know, people like The Conjuring 1 more than they do this one in terms of the critical community. I don't get it, Mike, because
I don't
for
either.
My money, other than it, Pennywise the Clown's it, this is like my favorite trip to the movies for a horror film of the last 10 years. I mean, this is like number 2 for me. This one's got my goat the most.
Big words. It's certainly one of the scarier ones. I mean, this thing scared the shit out of me.
Watching this late at night.
Oh, it was a bad idea.
last week.
Yeah.
When I turned this movie on, I was criticized watching this movie late at night. You're going to be way too scared. And I laughed them off, Mike.
I laughed them out of the room.
I almost heckled them out of the room. A half an hour later, I made the excuse to myself to where, oh, it's too late. I got to go to bed.
While your teeth are chattering under your sheet.
This movie scared me into stopping...
I'm surprised, one of the big highlights for me, I'm surprised it won an award for its score, because the lack of sound is kind of the scariest part. I thought Conjuring 1 was much more into the score, where Conjuring 2, silence pervades this movie.
Yeah.
And it just creeps you the shit out.
I think James Wan is putting on a clinic in this one, or a clinic. Anyway, basically the plot of The Conjuring 2 is the nun taunts Ed and Lorraine Warren, demonologist and psychic / spiritualist. They are spiritual superheroes. The nun taunts them into coming over to England to investigate what is the Enfield poltergeist. And a Ouija board, self-made Ouija board, by the way, under the bed of a young girl. We know Ouija boards under beds have disastrous consequences if you've listened to
Ouija
the
boards
year.
In general, just don't use them.
Yeah, the year in MMO, we've reviewed Veronica, which was a pretty cool horror movie on Netflix there.
This one actually reminded me of Veronica a little bit.
Sure.
But I think the poll is don't use Ouija boards. Don't right. taunt the occult.
Once that happens, this little poor family of girls are just haunted to the nth degree by whatever ghosts were in that old British house.
And it's clever because you think they're haunted by one thing, but it turns out to be maybe yes. something else. And
so
there's
the
a whole
quote-unquote procedural for the whole right. series. You get kind of payoffs for that. You know, they take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got paranormal investigators of a paranormal mystery. They're essentially Scooby-Doo and the van.
Yeah, but they're
there.
Also, they're Scooby-Doo, but victims themselves. Where the first episode, they're the professionals that come in. They kind of the ones that keep everyone quiet and protected
right.
and all that. And then this episode, this iteration of the franchise, they're under attack directly from a force, which didn't really happen in the first one until they confronted it. This yes. thing is something that wants to confront them.
Well, I think the cat's out of the bag, which is interesting. The cat's out of the bag, like in The Conjuring 1, yes, we know there's a ghost haunting us, but we're kind of following the Spielberg rule of don't show the monster till an hour in.
Good
and we're
point.
Really
yep.
not, we're not showing the horror up front, up close and personal too early. This one, we get that full carnival ride of horrors experience early.
Yep.
Like Bill Wilkins
yes.
is scaring the ever-living
shit
out of me early. My house!
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Scared the
oh my
fuck
God.
Out of me.
Oh my God. That scared.
There was that, and then there was the one early on in the tent in the dark hallway with the train.
That's a small spoiler, but there's
yeah,
small
it is.
Spoilers
I don't care.
Here.
You need yeah. to, because a lesser person is going to have a heart attack. You can't watch this with a heart condition. That yeah. scream
we're,
that comes
we're helping
out.
You.
Yes. Oh my God!
From that tent is this most ominous piece of any horror movie house I've seen in a long time.
Oh my God! It's
there's been
the
a lot of props, a lot of props that have been scary looking props. That the fact that that kid has an evil devil tent
Listen.
In his house.
I have seen a jillion horror movies. I am numb to scares a lot of times.
Yeah.
This movie made me legitimately jump. I don't jump anymore at scary things.
I am turned into a small child
yes.
watching this movie, and it is completely a terrifying experience as a grown 30-something man to realize you could still be scared watching a ghost story in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and I tell you, I voted for, if I were to vote, I should say, I guess, this would be my favorite of the four.
Right.
This is my number one, and I yeah. think it's a really interesting in that it's the same crew as Conjuring 1. It's basically the same players, the same main characters, except the
yes.
kids are different. So I thought this sequel is actually better than the original, which is a rarity in Hollywood.
So you mentioned some of your best scenes. I think the Bill Wilkins stuff and the nun stuff in this movie, I mean,
terrifying.
I was freaking out. Best
terrifying.
Scenes for me. No question. In terms of worst scenes, I think they're awesomely bad, even if they're bad. Like the Patrick Wilson stuff, singing the Elvis song as a tension relief is bad.
Yeah, I'm not sure James Wan is ready to do rom-coms.
But it's still funny
it
and fun. And then you have the Patrick Wilson doing his Three Stooges vaudevillian Wile E. Coyote sequence where he goes into the house at some point. I mean, he's auditioning for the remake of Home Alone, Mike. Yes, that was the exact song. I almost wanted to write that down, like sing that theme song, and I couldn't think of what it's from. What is that from?
I think it's from Benny Hill.
Benny Hill so, yeah. sounds exactly right.
Yeah. That's great. What you're talking about when he comes up through the floor and gets hit.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. The
faces we try to be
making.
Spoiler-free. I didn't say that at the top, so that's why we're kind of alluding to everything. We do
right.
try to be spoiler-free for these, but yes.
Also, Vera Farmiga's character, she is in a strategy session where she's like, all right, I know what I got to do. And then she gets in there, the ghost scares the shit out of her, and she totally forgets what she's supposed to do, and then, okay, back to the plan. This is, like, so ridiculous. Like, she just figured it all out, and then she goes in there, and then, ah! So dumb, but I still, it's like awesomely bad. Like we get the great payoff scare. I won't tell you who scares her, but we get that great scare, and then she remembers, all right, what the mission is, what she's got to do.
I that's my biggest problem. That was my worst scene, is how they decide that this can be, or what like they need to do to try to beat this,
mm-hmm.
the path they need to take, because the whole basis for this is that you got to take a leap of faith. It's about a leap of faith. And again, we're talking about religious entities and gods are playing a role into this. And there is a very heavy-handed religious aspect to this, sure, as there was in the first Conjuring. But
they're progressing the mythology forward.
Sure.
And I really like that. In terms of going from film one in the franchise to film three.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it gives the characters more depth. But this, getting to this point where they basically are on a train, something innocuous happens, and then out of the blue, they're like, wait a minute, this is how we beat it, when there's no lead up,
right,
up to that point.
She figures it out based on...
something that happens prior. Right.
Happenstance. But, yeah, that's true. I don't like...
Yeah, I thought it was clunky.
I don't like that, like, Deus Ex Machina is late, or coincidence is late, but
exactly my point.
It often happens,
yes,
in mysteries, and in the worst mysteries are happening.
Or if it's
going to
be a coincidence, make it something more substantive than...
The light bulb goes on, the epiphany goes off.
Right,
it's usually
exactly
something that they see in their everyday lives that does that.
Right, not this.
It's a convention is what I'm
I mean, this was
say.
Like a symbolism on top of symbolism.
Everything I've said in the last 5 minutes could have been explained away by the fact that, yes, it's a convention.
The tropes, the traditional horror trope, yeah.
But you're right, it's goofy, but the payoffs of the finale are fun.
So this whole movie's fun. You're not going to get a bad time watching anything from the Warren's universe.
Any Oscar lens here, Mike? You mentioned the sound. Here's where I kind of land on the sound. I know shit about it. I just don't.
Right.
Like, if I picture in my awkward fantasy life, Dr. Dre criticizing me of my musical taste.
That you should put on paper.
When I watched the Defiant ones, I just thought of how he sits in his, you know, bajillion-dollar music studio and analyzes how things sound.
I love when you start things that I have no idea where you're
and
going.
And I just think about my own taste in music and somebody I genuinely like My Morning Jacket or somebody, and me doing my stomp dancing, which is the only dancing I'm capable of doing.
Course.
And I just I think of someone like Dr. Dre or Ice Cube giving me that stare.
Uh-huh.
That stare of a thousand deaths.
Judging you, yes.
Judging me. Yes. I think of an Ice Cube staring at me based on my musical taste.
What does this have to do
with
the movie?
This has to do with I don't know shit about sound editing or sound mixing.
Okay.
So we could say sound, but it doesn't work coming from
us. Wow. Yes. No, you're right. What an explanation.
I have no confidence in myself as a sound mixing or sound editing critic.
Now,
that's what I'm saying.
We've said that ad nauseum in the past, too. We have to look up the definitions and stuff at times.
I think I could be a good critic of visual effects, you know?
Yeah, but at the same time,
movies
just in layman's
young
terms, I thought the sound, again, lack of sound was used so much more effectively in Conjuring 2, whereas Conjuring 1 was kind of reliant on, I said it actually might have gotten the nod, and horror movies in general are reliant on sound editing.
You admitted to me just the other day you're growing deaf, like you're almost deaf at this stage of your mid-30s life. And we also have admitted to liking the goofiest of goofy-ass bands ever. Both
yes,
of us.
Yes, I mean, if you're coming here to get a hard look, a hardcore in-depth look into sound mixing and editing, that's not why you should be here.
It's totally ironic, and it's a gag on all of you that we've done 10 episodes on the best original song category, and we just have so much fun doing them.
Well, that's the point, right? Those aren't our expertise.
Right, it's not our expertise.
But yes.
But that's like the only thing I could grab for an Oscar lens here.
These aren't Oscar movies, and we're not doing them for that reason. We're doing them to hype up the current
Patrick
events.
Wilson for Best Supporting Actor? No.
No. For Best Prop Fall, maybe. I also liked, I didn't like the conventions that he used sometimes, but there was one bright spot that I think James Wan has kind of perfected into his art, and he did it in The Conjuring 1, and he does it in this movie, and that's when the focus of the scene is on a blurred out background.
Right.
What's in the foreground is in focus, but you can't see what's going on in the background except that you know something's going on. And there's a scene in this movie where Patrick Wilson has his back turned and he's talking to someone behind
him.
And you see something going on, but you can't focus on it. He's done that a couple times, and it's so effectively done.
I feel like he's getting to some John Carpenter levels of misdirection, which was fascinating because I saw that same scare pulled off this year. We saw that same scare pulled off this year in Ari Aster's Hereditary.
Yeah.
I mean, and even though they don't have the big sound accompaniment with that jump scare, it's still, that was one of those,
creeps you
freak
out.
You
it's
out.
Totally there to creep you out. And it's such an effective tool.
Where's Waldo just pops up, optical illusion, one of those scares.
I like the way James Wan has been able to work it into seamlessly to two movies, and it's just very effective, like you said. I think that deserves to be highlighted.
No, this is a genuinely scary movie, and which makes me think The Nun could be a genuinely scary trip.
We're hopeful
to the theaters
for it, right? The trailers look great. The lack of reviews concerns us, but maybe we'll like it regardless. It's not always about what critics say, and the first Annabelle spoke to that, and Annabelle 2 kind of shows that if you give things more than one chance, they can correct themselves too. So what do we have here, Mike, on Annabelle Creation?
Yes, cast and crew. Annabelle Creation stars Golden Globe winner Anthony LaPaglia as the old doll maker Samuel Mullins. His beard was drawn on with crayon, the people in The Missing there. It's a new technique being used by makeup artists nowadays.
Just crayon. Sharpie marker on your face.
Taping pubes onto their face.
Take a piece of coal and just smash it in you.
LaPaglia is best known from a show that you watch, you're more familiar with than I am, Without a Trace.
That was such a good procedural missing person show.
I love those kinds of shows. The beginning of
the CSI heyday when William Peterson was still there.
You and my grandparents probably watched that show.
It was me and all old people. Yes, yeah. as a matter of fact.
This was on CBS.
It was CBS. That was their market. That, like, 35 to 70 range, and I would watch it every week. It would be CSI at 9 p.m., Without a Trace at 10 p.m., go to bed, and I'd go to school exhausted the next day.
Wow, I've never watched an episode of
Thursday
CSI.
Night.
Never once.
It was a great show, Without a Trace, and then they started fucking around with the time slot. It got lost in the wind, so. But it was like a quality six hitter in a lineup of like a great team. When it's like the unheralded six hitter goes like 280, 20 home runs, 90 RBIs, and then the team finishes with 110 wins. And you're like, oh my God, how do they get 110 wins? It's like, well, the six hitter had 20, 90 RBIs.
All of this is catnip to our listeners.
It's great. So it's like that unheralded, it's never going to be the MVP, but it's a solid, steady, reliable bat in the lower part of the lineup that kind of sets the table and was great for
nobody is left listening to this podcast now. We could just go for the rest of the episode, it wouldn't matter. Anyway, Anthony LaPaglia, he's also known from Lantana, which is an Australian movie.
I have nothing on that.
For me, he is Mike Myers' best friend from So I Married an Axe Murderer, where his serious dramatic chops, which he does have, they kind of stick out like a sore thumb in So I Married an Axe Murderer. He's like he'll never do another comedy again after that turn. Michael Myers is just, you know, doing Robin Williams like anecdotes throughout those scenes, and he's just like, yeah, give me a coffee. Sure, I'm your best friend. Anyway, Miranda Otto, who's Eowyn from The Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, Return of the King, plays Esther Mullins. She's a creepy character in this movie, Act 1 and Act 2. Samara Lee is a creepy kid playing the character of Bee.
Yeah.
Stephanie Sigmund plays Sister Charlotte. Her breakout performance came in 2011 with Miss Bala. I've also liked her in The Bridge, the Bond film Spectre. Netflix's Narcos I don't watch, but I liked her in Netflix's Shimmer Lake. She's awesome in that.
I thought she
was
great in this.
Lulu Wilson is becoming quite the horror movie scream queen / scream princess, Michael. She was the huge-mouthed meme from Ouija, Origin of Evil.
Say that three times fast.
That's after multiple edits there. She's been in Deliver Us from Evil, and she just played a ghost in HBO's Sharp Objects.
Ah, there you go.
So this actress, again...
It is funny how the kids that kind of start in horror make a lot of reps in horror. I think that's good for their profile,
obviously.
Those
parents put these kids
just
through a lot.
No regard for their mental well-being later in life.
Talitha Eliana Bateman plays Janice, the orphan girl... Man. The orphan girl with polio in this film. She perhaps is the greatest sleeper in the history of the world, Michael. Going to sleep after Annabelle haunts the ever-living shit out of her.
I thought of
after
you.
Annabelle haunts the ever-living shit out of her in that bedsheet.
I thought of you.
How did she get past that?
I thought of that.
Ever?
Yes. This is on the heels of you.
I would be catatonic for 10 years.
Maybe she was. Maybe that's how she was catatonic. She was just like, she was on the floor, paralyzed, couldn't move, and they're just like, oh, she just saw a ghost. Pick her up, put her into bed.
Honestly, Mike, my favorite, chillingest scene of this whole series so far for me.
Okay.
As good as the Conjuring 2 stuff is, as an overall, that's my favorite scene of the series. That bedsheet walking at her. Oh, my God.
It was creepy.
Anyway, Mark Bramhall is Father Massey, Grace Fulton is Nancy, Taylor Buck is Kate, and Joseph Bishara, the composer of the film, the award-winning composer of the film, plays the Annabelle demon herself/himself.
How about that?
That was interesting. You got some specs
there. Yeah, Annabelle Creation, written by Gary Dauberman, who was also back from the first Annabelle movie, directed by David S. Sandberg, who did Lights Out before this one, and has since been tasked with bringing Shazam to the silver screen. So, Dave, no pressure, but if you could like be bothered to save the DCEU, that'd be cool.
I like that trailer. I'm not going to lie.
I do, too. Not the first DC trailer I've liked.
Mm-hmm.
Debuted June 19th last year, 2017, at the LA Film Fest, and went wide on August 11th. Of the same year. We're talking about a 110-minute runtime on an R rating, produced by New Line, Atomic Monster, again, James Wan's production company, and the Saffron Company, who's been here for all the four Warren Cinematic Universe movies as well.
I just want to be like the receptionist at that production company. I'll take that.
James Wan's production company? Hello, this is Mike.
I got a good voice for phone reception.
Radio.
Hire me.
Distributed by Warner Brothers, and of course, has all of Lee's Conjuring and Annabelle films have been. $15 million production budget.
Bottom line, I got to go back. Sorry. I got to interrupt you because everybody's getting promoted over there. Everybody.
Yeah.
James Wan is the man.
Right.
Those are coattails to ride.
I mean, I don't.
And these specs will continue to illustrate that.
I would. If your thesis statement here is you would like to be hired by James Wan, then yes.
Yeah.
I also would like to be hired by James Wan. $15 million production budget, which is 2.5 times that budget of Annabelle 1, which was made for about $6 million. So now we're into full-fledged established brand territory.
Wow.
This thing can be relied on to basically print money, and that's exactly what happened again.
15 to 306. My God.
$35 million opening domestic box office weekend over just over 3,500 theaters means it not only debuted at number one, but basically put itself in the black within 4 days of its release. Makes it one of the 23 biggest August opening weekends ever for any genre.
Huge.
It finished with another $204.4 million coming in internationally, meaning its worldwide box office stands at $306.5 million, or an almost $50 million increase from the worldwide box office of Annabelle 1, which probably isn't bad for the $9 million increase that went into its budget.
Yeah, not a bad return.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we'll double your budget for Conjuring 2.
Warner Brothers,
we'll give you a 9% increase and then the same or better box office.
Well, Warner Brothers is just living off the backs of these films right now. It's got to be.
Wow.
They're making unseemly money. That's a great investment. Unlike Annabelle 1, Creation found itself with some critical support as well. We heard about all the low numbers that Annabelle 1 had while still being a financial success. This one actually gets more money. And also the critical reception, 6.6 IMDb rating on 75,000 plus reviews, a 70% critic score on Rotten Tomato on 163 critical reviews, 114 of those being positive. Average critical score of 6.2 out of 10, just missed the certified fresh threshold of 75% during its theatrical run. Audience score was way up as well, up to 68% on 21,000 reviews. Average audience score was 3.6 out of 5. A 62 meta rating on 29 critical reviews, 7 gave it a score of a 75 or higher. One person gave it a high score of 88, while 13 scores came in at a 60 or lower, including the low of a 20 from Josh Kupecki of the Austin Chronicle.
Wow. 20. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Have we seen a film that we would give a 20 to?
Yeah. Well, on our podcast, The Cloverfield Paradox was awesomely bad. We had a great time reviewing it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't
I wouldn't give that a 20. I'd give it a 49.
It's what I would say, a 50. Yeah, I can't imagine. Yeah, right.
This movie, those numbers make a lot of sense to me. When you judge those numbers and put them up against The Conjuring 2's numbers, which were similar, that does not make sense to me.
Because
I feel like The Conjuring 2 is a much better movie than this, but I feel like this is a good movie.
I think the Warrens are known. I don't think they are known as well, nor are they as appealing as the idea of a haunted doll.
Yeah, but these critics are just suckers to their own expectations. The Conjuring 1 was very good. Annabelle 1...
Oh, if you're talking about the critics, I thought you were talking
about the
financial.
Annabelle 1 was very bad. The audience members don't care. They want to see these movies.
Right. That's my point. I think the reason the financials are so a little similar, when they probably shouldn't be, is that I think the idea of a haunted doll is more universal than the idea of these ghost hunters. But
finally coming together in our own thought patterns now, I just think the critics are suckers to their own expectations based on the last movie, aren't they?
Probably, yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't make any sense.
horror is such a big bar to cross anyway. You're not going to get this universally critically acclaimed horror movie. And if you do, Get Out happens, right?
This movie is not better. It's not better constructed than The Conjuring 2. There's no way.
No.
The goods aren't as high.
Absolutely.
It is not half as scary, even though I think it's very good. Like, this movie, those numbers should make sense. The Conjuring 2 should be high 70s.
I told you yesterday, I think this is my least favorite of the four. I think this movie is my least favorite of the four.
Honestly, this was my least favorite rewatch of the four because I kind of knew the story. I knew the beats and I remembered the beats and the finale wasn't great, but I still loved a couple scenes, like loved them.
Oh, yeah.
I loved
that
one scene. It was so good because I was freaking out and I forget how it ended. And then I loved it.
No, I'm with you. There is a disparity. I can't explain it, but I know it's all good for Warner Brothers. I mean, they're sitting on a golden throne laughing with the money that these properties are making.
Yeah.
What's the average budget for any of these movies? 25 million? 20 million?
Whoever bought the rights to the Warren movies must be running the studio by now. If we really did our research, I'm sure we'd find a lot of promotions.
And good for James Wan, too. Yeah. I mean, he's the keeper of this legacy right now, but he is killing it. Everything he touches right now is turns of the Warren Cinematic Universe. People want to see.
You ready for some plot premise information here, Mike? All right, the IMDb has it written out like so. 12 years after the tragic death of their little girl, a doll maker and his wife welcome a nun and several girls from a shuttered orphanage into their home, where they soon become the target of the doll maker's possessed creation, Annabelle.
Okay, so they mentioned the death of the little girl.
Right.
That death of that little girl, I didn't know that happened in this movie, and it happens early in this movie, so it's not a spoiler.
It's the first 10 minutes, yeah.
It comes out of nowhere.
Right.
Like, it's so random. It's like, oh, there's a car. They have a car breakdown, so they have to address it, and they're like, honey, there's a car coming, and then the car just hits the girl.
Yeah.
There's no lead up. There's no tension building. There's just, he's working on a car, and then the girl's hit.
So I'm surprised. It's almost like an underwhelming death for this character that seems to be so important. I know
it's like the exact opposite of something that happens relevant in one of the movies that we've reviewed this year. I mean, I wish I could go into further depth with that, but it's like...
No, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, spoiler free.
It's one of our Oscar sprint profiles.
Yes, which shouldn't be hard to figure out, but nonetheless, we can't say it. What do you want to talk about with this plot here? It's pretty cut and dry. There's not a whole lot of intricacies. The highlights, obviously, are the scares, which there are a substantial amount.
I liked kind of all the interplay with the girls and obviously the hauntings. So it's a lot of different characters to haunt.
Yep.
Which is always good. So they're playing on that formula. Like, all these families have been big families. And this is like a bunch
of
orphans.
I like that too.
So,
my best scenes were probably the scares. The ending I thought was really well done. I really loved how the ending tied into the universe.
I just wish the special effects of the ending were a little better. It felt like, to me, I like the stuff with the surprise, quote-unquote, haunted item. I won't talk about it. That was great.
Yep.
When the girls are in the car. But when they're in the house, it kind of looks ridiculous, and the demon doesn't look great. So I was a little upset about that, even though I like the stuff with the well. I like the stuff.
It was I mean, there are some conventions that are kind of turned on its head. I don't think this movie had grand plans for itself outside of just being a spooky movie with an ending that kind of would leave fans of continuity sound.
Yeah, my biggest criticisms of this movie in terms of worst scenes is like, I think this little girl is so dumb, and that's like a terrible evil criticism for a man to think a child's dumb. Of course the child's
dumb.
No,
because...
But why would she not
If the protagonist makes unlogical or irrational decisions in a horror movie, it could absolutely ruin the movie.
If I saw what she saw, I would be traumatized for the next rest of my life, for 50 years, if I saw what
I
she
have
saw.
I have a similar complaint. It was my worst scene. I think the Mullins character, Mr. Mullins, is informed that this stuff is going on, and he knows for a fact what is going on.
Yeah, he's in
and
such
he kind of,
denial.
Yeah, he kind of like just refuses to hear it, which I get is denial, but also, if you know what's happening, if someone tells you what's happening, that means you know the demon's out.
The fix, Michael, lies in the fact that he has a bad wig early in the movie, and I'm going to explain this. This is a deep cut.
Uh-huh.
So if you have an actor who's 50-something years old, little gray in the hair,
right,
looks like he's 50-something years old, looks his age, it's natural.
Yeah.
Be that actor.
Okay.
Be that character in the movie. Okay? Don't give him jet black hair in an earlier scene with the same rest of his face, right?
Yeah.
If they made him look like his 50-year-old self then, as he looks now, he could have been like the guy who didn't age, who was stuck in time, who was stuck in his trauma, who was stuck in all of those.
So it could have been a very meta explanation for their
perfect.
Own. Yeah, no,
he was stuck in his haunted past.
Yeah,
it would have been perfect.
That's actually a really good point.
And as a screenwriting trope, that would have been interesting to see the demons have that power over his appearance, which we've seen in other things, maybe not in horror movies as much, but that would be great. Rather than giving him a goofy ass wig.
No, that's a good point. And that character actually could have worked it into anything. Could be a storyline. I'm starting to realize anything could have artistic weight to it if you cared enough. You're right. That seems like a bit of a missed opportunity.
His lack of a wig could have had the story key to it, and our worst scenes would never exist. But
any other worst scenes before we talk about the best of the best?
I think Stephanie Sigmund is underutilized in this movie a little
bit.
I would agree.
I
like how, you know, she has some big moments. I like that we have a spiritual warrior with some credibility as a nun involved here, and how,
and again, those are those religious overtones.
Right, and she's shown to be a powerful character in terms of, you know, her associations there. Yeah, she's kind of knocked out of the storyline for a while. And you got to do this in horror movies and action movies. Even think about Jurassic Park. You need vulnerable protagonists in these movies. That's why Sam Neill and Laura Dern have to take care of those goofy little kids.
Yeah.
And that's why you got little kids in this movie being haunted. So it makes sense. The more vulnerable the characters, the more scary it can be. You know, the character in Jaws is afraid of water.
Yeah. That's a very, very substantial. That's a deeper point than I think this movie gets to at any point.
Well, but they get that. Yeah. So if it's just Stephanie Sigmund being haunted, it's not as scary because she's capable,
right?
And she's a strong character. So yeah, and she gives the pep talk to the. That's why you kill off the stronger mentor character, and you make the hero who has never really climbed that mountain have to climb that mountain and stand up to the ghost.
Now, by the same turn, they kind of wanted that strength to also be seen in the Janice character, the 10-year-old with the polio.
Right.
And I think she's given too many dimensions. Like, she has to be the mentor character to her own little sister, and
right.
Tries to like feel a myriad of emotions that really you wouldn't be able to. Manage unless you were an adult.
There's something missing there with that character. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, so
it
those
didn't quite work.
That's the worst. What about the best scenes? Obviously, we said the scares; those are the best.
I said my best scene in the whole series, maybe the best scare in the whole series when I seen it the first time, is in this movie. I loved it. I really liked some of the gags with the. It's not gags, but some of the conventions with the notes and the well.
Those are clever.
And the Bible verse closet, and a lot of that stuff is just like the production design of this movie is terrific.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It's
so easy for any horror fan to get attached to any kind of religious. If you don't bash yourself over the head with it, any kind of religious calling to fight a demon, it's like, yes, I'm in. I know what we're doing. I know who the bad guy is. I know why this works.
Yes, it's so easy to scare a bunch of little girls in the woods.
Right.
As we know from personal experience.
Of course.
Oh my God.
Daily
no,
doings,
of course
yes.
not. Of course not. But it's harder to scare them in the middle in a house in the middle of the desert, like, right? I mean, this is like a weird little town, desert town in California, and it's not your typical horror movie setting, right?
No, there is so much playing with the conventions but also going against type. I thought that scene where the Janice character finds herself wheeled into the scary looking farmhouse. I thought that was so
awesome.
So cool.
I like the first half of the stuff done in the farmhouse. I didn't like the rest of it, the finale, but I like
the finale comes quick too, but yeah.
I didn't like the Anthony LaPaglia playoff, even though it made some sense with the narrative. I like the Miranda Otto stuff. And
yes,
I thought the stuff
I'm with
played
you
with Annabelle's mom there was terrific.
And to me, the biggest highlight was the way that this was allowed to connect to the Conjuring universe at the end. Warren's universe at the end.
We don't have to get into spoilers, but it's a direct connection.
Loved
which
it.
which is awesome.
And I wasn't expecting it either. I makes a lot, so much sense the way they laid it out. And that had to have been storyboarded before production started because it's just such a highlight.
Gary Dauberman, the writer of the first
one. Yeah. Ties it in beautifully. Good for him.
Did I talk about him in Cast and Crew?
I don't think you did.
Oh, I just went right to the cast, didn't I? So, yeah, I forgot to mention who directed and wrote this movie.
Dave, you did? I thought you did. I mentioned him in my... So I'm like, I don't think Mike would have
said
steal.
It. Yeah. I didn't say it. David F. Sandberg.
Yeah.
And Gary Dauberman, the writer of It and all those great movies. Sandberg did Lights Out. You're saying he directed Shazam, which is coming out. So, wow, I can't believe I forgot that. Even the greats, they mess up once in a while. A
couple hundred hours of content, you're bound to overslap something once in a while. So why were these movies a hit? We already talked about for the Conjuring 2. Why was this one such a big financial success and much more of a critical hit than Annabelle 1?
I think they're finding more of those theme park carnival rides of horrors, conventions. They're nailing those conventions down. And this movie feels like more of a Conjuring movie than it does Annabelle 1, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. This one confused me because of that a little bit, because this is supposed to be how the Annabelle doll came to be by its namesake. But yeah, you're right. It does feel more like a more worldly horror movie than it does a specific doll causing all the trouble.
But there's an actual coherent storyline to this movie. And even though, yet again, we have an Annabelle movie with a protagonist that's kind of dumb that I'm criticizing, right?
Yes.
The first Annabelle, she was a moron.
She was, yeah. Those characters were not written nearly as well as these girls.
And I'm a bad person because I'm criticizing a pregnant character as a moron.
Those characters were not written as well as
this. And this one's a character with polio who's a great older sister, and she's a moron. They're both morons.
I don't disagree. I think these girls were written better than the first two Annabelle characters.
Correct, correct. Better than the first two.
Yeah.
Still kind of dumb. Anthony Leopagli is kind of dumb.
Yes.
And that's where the movie may not... You know, or may lack, or maybe that's the next stage here. You bring some
overly capable protagonists to fight. Yeah,
right. Like Get Out. I mean, think about Get Out. Think about Silence of the Lambs. The best horror movies.
We hammer it
us.
All the time. You need a capable antagonist. You need a capable protagonist.
So if they're scared by association, we should be terrified.
That's why The Conjuring 2 worked, because the Warrens are capable and were scared. So yeah, that's a really good point. I totally agree. But nonetheless, this one made a ton of money. So there's no reason to stop. I imagine we're going to be in line for Annabelle 7 through 29 at some point.
Annabelle 3 next July,
there
baby.
There you go. It'll be coming out soon, but let us know. We are in the lead up now to The Nun. That's the next stop. That's the next step in this horror franchise. The most unlikely of cinematic universes is going to be The Nun, the fifth movie in the Warren Cinematic Universe. That's going to be coming out this week, at the end of this week, by the time you're listening to this. So hopefully it'll be a surprise, it'll be a hit, and a more financial success for Warner Brothers to keep churning out some more of the Warren's universe.
Yeah, this is a fun cinematic universe to analyze, and of course, you know, we liked it as fans before we started.
Without question. And it's nice to have a horror universe. It's nice to see a dark universe, sorry, Universal, but something that actually is substantive like this.
They're making new monsters, and they're making them fun. Yeah. And it's working so much better than Universal's hundreds of million dollars invested. This is $10 million here.
Yeah.
This is, well, at $60 million in the Conjuring films, and then how much money in the two Annabelle films? $15 million?
Combined, I think it was $24 between the two of them.
Oh, my God. So that's $84 million for over $1.5 billion
something like that.
Returns?
Not a bad investment.
Yeah.
Decent ROI.
Not too bad.
Let us know if you're excited for The Nun and what you thought about Annabelle Creation and The Conjuring 2. Are you looking forward to Conjuring 3 or Annabelle 3 coming out next year? We want to be on top of those, and we are horror movie fans here as well, and tis the season, of course. It's September. The calendar turns to September. Mm-hmm. October in the pipeline. Halloween in the pipeline. We want to do more scary stuff for the next couple of months. This is the start of it. We are Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com on Reddit. We are everywhere you type in Mike and Oscar. Just type us in. You'll see our smiling cartoony faces waving back at you. And if you can leave us an iTunes review, that'd be even better for us.
Yeah, those help a lot. And we appreciate it, everybody. We just had our best month in the history of our podcast.
Yeah, totally. Thank you very much for clicking play, and we hope
it's the beginning of September.
Continuing to do it. We love doing this, and we love the feedback that you guys have been giving us, and we want to hear more of it. Mike, any final words of wisdom here?
Put James Wan in charge of your cinematic universes.
Sounds
that man.
Very sound, solid advice.
Will make you some money.
You can have a dark Joker, too, if you did that. I mean, that'd be something. Let him helm the Joaquin Phoenix one.
I'm getting slightly more excited for Aquaman. Is James Wan?
I do like James Wan. You know what? If anyone can do that, sir, justice.
Patrick Wilson's in it.
Yeah, I think that might be. All right.
Maybe he's got
you
a
convinced
shot.
Me. All right. Reality sucks, guys. Keep watching movies with us and don't check under your bed.
See ya.
You told me once, dear, you really loved me, that no one else could come between. But now you've left me and love another. You have shattered all my dreams. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take